Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
Democracy doesn't mean anything if you can vote a government every 4 or 5 years, but then the ones who take the main decisions are the capitalists who have not been elected by anyone.
That's the voice of Hands Up Venezuela's Secretariat, Jorge Martin. On this week's show, we speak to Jorge about the ongoing crisis in Venezuela and events in Crimea and how this relates to the capitalist system. So stay tuned.
We're very privileged to be joined by the Secretariat of Hands Off Venezuela. Jorge Martí is my guest. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Now, there is power in stories. You know, Eduardo Galeano says it's not true that we're made only of atoms. We're also made of stories. Can we talk a little bit about the story of the Bolivarian revolution? Because it's been described as the beautiful revolution. And perhaps talk a little bit about the context under which this revolution was birthed.
Yes, it is. This week, it was 1 year since the death of Hugo Chavez, who obviously played a key role in developing the Bolivarian Revolution. The Bolivarian Revolution has achieved a lot, has achieved so many things in a very unfavorable context. And just to mention maybe three main points of the achievements of the Bolivarian Revolution. One is in relation to education. For instance, through a one-year program that took place in 2005, Venezuela has eradicated illiteracy, teaching the basics of how to read and write to over 1 million people, and is now the second country in the Latin American continent to be free from illiteracy after Cuba. At the same time, there has been a massive expansion of access to higher education, which is free of charge in Venezuela, unlike in many of the advanced capitalist countries. And the number of higher education, the number of university students has gone up from 800,000 in 1998, when the Bolivarian Revolution started, to over 1.8 million now in 2013. In the field of healthcare, for instance, there's been a massive program to provide basic primary healthcare in the poor neighborhoods in the capital and throughout the country. It's a program that's called Misión Barrio Adentro, and that has already saved many lives and basically given access to primary health care to people who've never seen a doctor in the poor neighborhoods before. And the third one that I always like to highlight is the question of housing, because in advanced capitalist countries, for instance, in Spain, hundreds of thousands of people have had their homes repossessed because of the economic crisis and them becoming unable to repay the mortgages to the banks and being evicted from their homes. In Venezuela, in just over 1 year, the Gran Misión Vivienda, the housing social program, has provided homes to 1.7 million people, in most cases free of charge or at very low repayment rates, mainly to people who lived in slums, in slum conditions, in very poor housing before and so on. So it just basically shows what is possible to do if you run the economy in the benefit of the people, in trying to fulfill people's needs rather than trying to fulfill the need for private profit. These are the three main achievements. There are many others, but I would say these are three outstanding achievements. The Bolivarian Revolution obviously started back in 89, you can say. It was as a breaking point. In 1989, in February, and now it was also the anniversary, February 27th, there was a government of Carlos Andrés Pérez, which introduced a package of neoliberal measures And this provoked an uprising, a spontaneous uprising of the people. There was looting, demonstrations, clashes with the police. And at that time, the government decided to use the army against the unarmed demonstrators. Thousands died. Up until this day, it's not known how many. But thousands died in what was known as El Caracazo, the Caracas uprising, although the uprising took place also in other cities. And that was a breaking point in which most people realized that the formal democracy that they had, which was called the Fourth Republic, was completely worthless, didn't represent the interests of the people, and had to be replaced. And that was the beginning of the Bolivarian movement. Also, in reaction to this question of using the army against unarmed demonstrators, a group of junior military officers, amongst them Hugo Chavez, decided to attempt to organize an uprising against that government, in which took place in 92. And that's what propelled Hugo Chavez to the public scene and became well known as someone who was trying to fight the government that had ordered the army to kill thousands of unarmed civilians. That's what gave him his popularity. His courage in attempting to carry out this uprising. And finally, in 98, he was elected president of the country in a democratic election. He then went on to win every single election and referendum in the next 15 years, with only one exception. This is an extremely democratic choice of the Venezuelan people to support the Bolivarian Revolution and the achievements it has had. The Bolivarian Revolution has not been completed and is still under threat today. There was an attempt yesterday to bring the Organization of American States into Venezuela. The U.S. House of Representatives 2 days ago passed a resolution calling for sanctions against Venezuela and this, that, and the other. But nevertheless, it has already achieved quite a lot and has become an inspiration for people around the world.
Many things happened in 2013. As you point out, Hugo Chavez, President Hugo Chavez, died unexpectedly, you know. And for someone, a young leader and so inspirational, it was a real loss. Another leader died on that same year, Nelson Mandela. And one cannot avoid looking at the contrast of how their achievements have been, you know, hailed or dismissed in the media. On one hand, you know, the Mandela was, you know, praised for overcoming apartheid and for establishing democracy. And yet, in Africa today, in South Africa today, the people, the workers, are calling for a parting of ways with the capitalist system, and you know, they're calling for a socialist system. In Venezuela, the president themselves, the leadership, came for and expressed, you know, the path forward being a socialism of the 21st century. Can we talk a little bit about the significance of this message of moving away from the capitalist system? What are the impediments that capitalism presents for people, as workers, as human beings, as parents, as teachers, to create a society that is inclusive of all voices?
You mentioned South Africa, and this is a very good example, because in South Africa in 1994, there's also an anniversary coming up, there were the first democratic elections after the collapse of apartheid. And obviously Mandela is correctly praised for his role in the struggle against apartheid, which he was at the head of. But at the same time, it must be recognized that the settlement that they arrived in 92 included a clause which was known as the Sunset Clause, which guaranteed that the ANC in power will not touch the capitalist system. And that was a big mistake. Looking back to it 20 years later, you can see that South Africa has become one of the most unequal societies on earth. Levels of poverty are even higher than they were under apartheid, and the basic conditions for workers and the poor have not been transformed, have not changed at all. And there's now a massive seething discontent going on in the country amongst trade unionists, the poor, the peasants, the agricultural workers, and so on. Meanwhile, in Venezuela, Chavez reached a similar conclusion. He didn't start out as a socialist, but in 2004, 2005, he made a series of important speeches in which he said, Within the limits of capitalism, it is not possible to solve the problems of poverty that affect most of the world's poor. And I think he was completely right. You see, capitalism, the core of capitalism is the idea that the economy must be run in order to create profits, maximize profits for a small unelected minority of people who are the owners of the means of production, the banks, the land, the companies, and so on. And this enters directly into contradiction with the interests of the majority of the population. Just a few days ago, some executive of Bayer, the multinational pharmaceutical company, he, in negotiations with the Indian government over generic versions of a cancer drug that they have created, they said, "We didn't develop these cancer drugs so that the Indians can use it because they cannot pay for them." So, I mean, that's a clear indication that the motor force of capitalism, which is the maximization of private profit, enters into direct contradiction with the interests of the majority. In Venezuela, we're seeing this very clearly now. In Venezuela, the government has renationalized some companies that have been privatized before, like telecommunications, electricity, steel mills, and some others. But two-thirds of the economy is still in private hands. And these private capitalists, they're using their control of the economy to sabotage the Bolivarian Revolution, which has been democratically decided by the majority because they feel it is a threat to their interests. And in my opinion, the only way out of this is for the Bolivarian Revolution to actually expropriate these people so that the resources of the country, which is not been created by the capitalists, have been created by the sweat and hard work of working people, can be used to satisfy and fulfill the needs of the majority, can be democratically planned to solve the problems that affect the majority of the population in a democratic way. Democracy doesn't mean anything if you can vote a government every 4 or 5 years, but then the ones who take the main decisions are the capitalists who've not been elected by anyone.
Can we talk a little bit about the way this media propaganda or media attacks have created this culture of insecurity and disempowerment of the workers?
In a capitalist society, the means of communication, the mass media, the big TV stations, the big newspapers are controlled by the capitalists themselves. They're not interested in promoting any ideas that go against the system, and is a powerful means of manipulation of public opinion. And they basically serve to reinforce and transmit the dominant ideas of the ruling class. For instance, in relation to Venezuela, there is a very persistent and deliberate media blockade. Any good news coming out of Venezuela will not reach any of the major news outlets. And they're interested in presenting their own side of the story. If the workers realize the power they have, this is the main danger for the capitalist owners of the means of production. If the workers realize the power they have in society, then that's the end of a capitalist system, because the workers produce everything. The workers move everything. I mean, without the kind permission of the working class, not a wheel turns, not a light bulb shines. Nothing works. They create all wealth. They make society work. But the most normal times, they are not aware of the power they have. For instance, in Venezuela, there is a lot of talk about, oh, but Chavez polarized the country. What they really mean is that in the past, the poor and the workers, they were oppressed, but they didn't know about it and they weren't doing anything about it. Now they are rebelling, they are getting organized, and they are fighting against. That's what worries them. This is the so-called polarization, when in reality what you have is a big majority of the population have risen up demanding their rights and trying to transform society. So this is what is happening. And from an international point of view, Venezuela also represents the threat of a good example. If people realize that things can be changed through mass action, through revolutionary actions, through workers' control, of which there are many good examples in Venezuela, then people in other countries might get the idea that this is the way forward. And it is already having an impact, despite the media propaganda. The other thing I will say is that one should not overestimate the power of the means of communication, the power of the mass media, because in Venezuela, there is a good example that this is not the case. On April the 11th, 2002, there was a military coup against the Chavez government, carried out by the oligarchy, by the capitalists, and the mass media played a big role in this coup. They basically said that the government had ordered the army to fire on unarmed demonstrators, that Chavez had resigned. But people didn't believe this, even though this was the only news that were going out on all the TV channels, on all the mass media, on all the radio stations. But people, because of their own experience in the revolution, they did not believe this, and they demanded that Chavez be brought back. They came out on the streets, they demonstrated outside the military barracks, they managed to split the army down the middle, and they finally defeated the coup. At the time when the mass media were completely against them. So once the people realize the power they have, the power that is in collective action, it is becomes much more difficult for the ruling class to spread their ideas through the mass media because people become very suspicious.
But there's also a lesson that we learn with each attack. We also learn to resist. In Ukraine, the story is being presented a little bit different. Can we talk a little bit about the context of the difference of these examples? In essence, people are rising up, and the question is who and why and what are the differences that we need to be aware of?
In the Ukraine, what is happened now, I will say, is a different matter. The government of Yanukovych wasn't a progressive government by any stretch of imagination. It was a government of one section of the mafia types that are running the economy in the Ukraine since the collapse of Stalinism. But what has happened has been the replacement, the overthrow of this government by another gang of people who, if anything, they are worse. First of all, the opposition is mainly dominated. The political leaders of the opposition are also oligarchs, only they have different interests. They're not part of the Yanukovych clan. They're part of another clan, which is probably more pro-European Union. But worse than that, what is really worrying is the very important role that extreme right-wing neo-Nazi elements have played in the actual clashes in the streets. Some of these organizations are very clearly anti-Semitic. Some of them claim proudly the Nazi past of those who fought with the Nazi army in the Second World War. And obviously this is becoming very worrying. The whole country is becoming split along national and linguistic lines. The Ukrainian speakers and against the Russian speakers, but then also other groups, the Jews, the Tatars and the Cossacks and other groups. And all of this is in nobody's interest in the Ukraine. It's just these are proxy wars fought between Russia and the European Union, between different gangs of oligarchs, the intervention of the United States, which is very clear. And now, very interestingly, there's also been some revelations that during the repression of the demonstrations, there were snipers being hired by the opposition firing on both sides. And this reminds us very powerfully of what happened in Venezuela on April 11th, 2002, when there were snipers hired by the opposition to give the impression that the government was firing against unarmed demonstrators and to spark the overthrow of the government at that time. What is really missing in the Ukraine is the voice of the working people. The main difference between the Ukraine and Venezuela is not that in both countries there has been a coup, but the difference is that there is no revolutionary movement in Ukraine to speak of, that the workers and the poor have no independent voice. The only ones who are fighting on both sides is oligarchs, mafia capitalists, and different imperialist interests from outside of the Ukraine. And the perspective that opens up for the Ukraine is one of a nightmare of reaction, like there was in Yugoslavia when Yugoslavia was split up between different warring factions, national ethnic cleansing, and so on in the wars that followed 1992. It's interesting also that now in Bosnia, one of the places that suffered most from that reactionary war, there is a movement of the citizens, movement of working people against privatization and so on. And this movement is uniting people across national and linguistic borders. There are Serbian, Bosniaks, and people from different denominations, and Croatians and so on, uniting across national lines and against capitalism, along class demands, against privatization and so on. This I think is very promising, but Ukraine is very far from that. The whole conflict now is along national lines and linguistic lines, and basically there's different warring factions dominated by oligarchs and reactionary interests. There's not much which is progressive in there that you can point to.
Can we talk a little bit about, I guess, our own solidarity with workers, and how do we not only express that, but create a social movement of workers that is globalized, just like the capitalist system has globalized itself and managed to make all kinds of alliances along the lines of capital concentration?
Yes, there are two related points. One is that obviously we are against imperialist intervention. In this case, in Venezuela, as I said before, the House of Representatives in the United States passed a motion the other day saying that urging the government to take measures against Venezuela, selected targeted sanctions and so on. This is imperialist interference, which Venezuela has quite rightly outrightly rejected. At the same time, the interests of working people are the same everywhere. And President Maduro of Venezuela, and before him President Chavez, they made a very clear point of saying that, look, we are against the U.S. administration. We are against Washington interfering in our sovereign affairs. But at the same time, we are brothers and sisters. We make an appeal to the American people, to the people of the U.S., and as a matter of fact, PDVSA, the Venezuelan oil company, has been providing cheap fuel for poor people in neighborhoods in Harlem, in Chicago, and in other parts of the United States. So there is this element of internationalism. Chavez himself said once, the best way in which you can help the Bolivarian revolution is by creating the conditions for revolution in your own countries. Capitalism is a worldwide system. And the extraction of surplus value, the maximization of private profit, exists everywhere. And therefore, in the last instance, the interests of working people in Caracas, interests of working people in Vancouver, the interests of working people in London or Madrid or Bangladesh, they're basically the same. And we're fighting against the same enemy. One victory for our class in one country is a victory for all of us. And socialism will have to be international or it will not be. And I think that in this new era of modern communications, instantaneous communications between different parts of the world, there is already a strong element of the movements in one country learning from the lessons of movements in other countries. For instance, I will say that the Arab Spring was strongly influenced by the Latin American Revolution. Chavez had become an extremely popular leader in many of these countries. Then, after the movement in Tahrir Square in Egypt, in Spain, we had the Indignados movement, the movement of the enraged, which took the inspiration from that movement in Egypt, the idea that by taking in a massive way to the squares, you can start to change things. The Occupy movement in the United States drew its inspiration largely from these events as well. The idea that we needed to do something, to come out on the streets, protest, that's a good beginning, but it's not the end of the struggle against capitalism. Those movements had also their own shortcomings. But the most important thing is that people were learning from the experience of other countries. In Spain, right now in Portugal, many people are looking towards what's happening in Greece, because Greece is the country where the crisis of capitalism is more acute and also where the resistance is stronger or more developed. And people are looking to learn the lessons from the rise of Syriza, the left-wing party in Greece, also the shortcomings of Syriza, the idea of whether general strikes can change the situation or not, what is necessary, what is required. And I think that there is a very fertile learning from the experiences of workers in other countries. New technologies and new means of communication have also brought the workers from different countries and the revolutionaries from different countries much closer one to another.
Thank you so much for being with us. In closing, you know, we face not only a collective crisis that is this continuous war for territory, for empire pursuit, imperial pursuit, but also we face, you know, a cultural war that separates us from one another. What inspires you that we not only have what it takes to overcome the climate crisis that we face, the political and social crisis that we have been that has been imposed on us by a history of colonial power and history of a cultural domination. How do we move forward?
Well, I will say that it is the crisis of capitalism that's pushing people into action. If capitalism was able to guarantee a decent life, or more or less decent life for everyone, or certain perspectives for the future, there will be really no case for revolution on a mass scale. But the movements that you see in Spain, in Portugal, in Greece, the movement that we've seen from earlier on in Latin America is mainly driven not by any ideals as such, but the primary motor force of those movements is the inability of capitalism to guarantee the basic living conditions for the majority of the people. And from that, from a Marxist point of view, we know that social being determines consciousness, and changes in living conditions is what determines changes in consciousness. People who previously never thought of themselves as revolutionaries or wanting to participate in transforming society, they are now forced to do so through the hammer blows of events that are happening around them. And I think that this is what will allow us to create a worldwide revolutionary movement. Revolutions take place in waves. There was one such wave at the end of the 1960s and the early 1970s, which affected most countries in the world to one degree or another, and that was defeated. We need to learn the lessons why it was defeated or derailed or co-opted by the system. But I think that now another opportunity is coming. And what I will urge people is, first of all, to study, to understand how capitalism works, to understand the lessons of previous revolutions, and secondly, to get active in the struggles that are already taking place around you, armed with that knowledge and trying to intervene in an effective way to transform the situation. And for this time, that there should be a victory for our class, a victory for our side, because that's the only thing that can guarantee the future of humanity. You mentioned the environmental crisis, but there's many other questions around us. If we do not overthrow capitalism, capitalism is likely to destroy life on this planet as we know it.
Thank you so much for being with us. My guest is Jorge Martí. He is the Secretariat of Hands Off Venezuela. How can people access your work?
Yes, we have a website which is called handsofvenezuela.org. And I am also involved in the editorial board of a Marxist website, which is called In Defense of Marxism, and that's marxist.com. And I will urge people to basically, first of all, get informed, get educated, and secondly, to become active in the struggle for a better society.
Thank you again for being with us.
Thank you.
Take care. That was Jorge Martí. He is the Secretary of Hands of Venezuela. We reached him in the UK. We have come to the end of our program. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program available to campus and community radios. Please visit our website, www.latinwavesmedia.com, to hear previous shows, connect to our media projects, and access other resources, or to support our efforts by making a safe PayPal contribution. I am Sylvia Richardson. Thanks for listening.